Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with Todd Bowl, founder of Little Free Libraries. We'll also speak with Jeffrey Cohen, whose new children's book is Eva and Sadie and the Worst Haircut Ever. You all have probably seen those little free libraries in front yards and on corners around town. They look welcoming and charming, like birdhouses for books, and they invite passersby to take a book and leave a book. We're especially pleased today to have with us Todd Bowl, the co-founder of Little Free Libraries. Todd, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So this all began, Little Free Libraries, as a tribute to a book-loving mother, right?
Correct. You know, I'm often asked if my mother was an avid reader, and I really never thought she was, because she just always read. And when you're a little kid growing up, you know, you just see your parents and you don't say, ah, there's an avid reader. But I found that she just read all the time, and we just thought that was a natural thing to do anyway. And she exchanged books with family members and friends and talked about them. And so I was always aware of that as a little kid.
And so then when she died, you built the first Little Free Library.
Yeah, and I built it, but there was kind of two things going on in my mind. One, when she died 10 years before that, I'd given away a little gift to people under the idea that it was an old colonial tradition in the United States to give a gift when somebody passes. Also, there's an old Sioux Indian tradition that says nobody really ever dies until all they've touched are gone. And so I made a little necklace that was in a heart shape, and it said June A. Bowl, a dancing spirit, 1927 through. So I felt my mother's spirit and how she was about life would, you know, dance on. And so I created the Little Free Library in honor of my mom and kind of her spirit and who she was. And she always tutored people, and we always had kids over the house that she was helping. And my mom was that kind of person that you likely felt better about yourself around her than anybody else. You know, she didn't die in my mind. She just kept living through so many different things. And so I created the little library to honor her and to, as a gift to the neighborhood. And that's how it started.
And it was in the shape of a little red schoolhouse, wasn't it?
Yeah, the shape of a little red schoolhouse. And actually, the state of Wisconsin's Historical Society has asked for that little library to put in Madison as a cultural icon for the state of Wisconsin.
Ah, how great. How great. And so things grew from there and grew fairly quickly, didn't they?
Well, it looks that way, but in reality, we had a garage sale in 2010, and I noticed that people talked to it like it was a little puppy, and they'd hug it, and men, women, children, and I thought that was kind of magic. I felt it was like Dorothy who discovered, you know, the Tin Man, and put a little oil in the Tin Man, and he started to dance. And so gentleman Rick Brooks from the University of Wisconsin in Madison and I launched him in Madison. And first year we sold one, and then the winter came by, we kind of talked about it. We had 30 of them, and we didn't know what to do with them. And we said, well, you know, Martin Luther King, when he was asked, what would you do if you die tomorrow? He said, I'd plant a seed. And so we figured we'd just plant some seeds. And so we took the Little Free Library and we gave it to different people around the Madison area. And then come 2011, it started to pick up a bit more. And then I think our real big break is we were on a public radio, Gene Faraca, Here on Earth, which is across Wisconsin. And when that hit, we had 68,000 people come to our website. And then the media continued. And at this point, we're almost at 4,000 media stories that have been covering us in about 2.5 years.
And Little Free Libraries are everywhere now. How many states have them?
Well, we've been in every state for about 1.5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, our initial goal was to pass Andrew Carnegie and build 2,510, one more than him. He had money and he did it.
Yes,
we had no money.
But good intentions.
Yeah. Actually, we started on our deck. And so we passed Andrew Carnegie in August of 2012. And people kept asking me, you know, what would be our next number, our next goal that we could go for? And I decided that our next goal is to pass McDonald's. And if we beat McDonald's, around 50, 55,000 libraries, which should take us another year and a half, we want to put a little medallion on a library that says over a billion books read. And then, you know, maybe a little piece underneath, more books than burgers. You know, I thought that would be kind of fun.
Oh, wouldn't that be the best? So tell us about the process. How do people go about getting one and setting one up in their own front yard if they like?
Well, it's been actually kind of a little miracle. 65% of the people build their own, and they do all kinds of things. They work with their neighbors. They build them out of old washing machines. They build them out of old canoes.
Phone booths.
They do all kinds of things, and they get their family members together. They work with their local church. They go down to the local Lowe's, and they ask for help, and they start building them. And we've been called a folk art revival. And if you go to our website at littlefreelibrary.org, and just go look in the Flickr link, you'll see over 7,000 little free libraries that have been built around the world, over 65 countries.
Such amazing designs, too. They're really fun to look at.
Oh,
you know?
I get lost in it. It's just a hoot.
So what brought you to Louisiana? What made you have the swing through the South?
Well, we have a new program called Books Around the Block, and the idea is to get books in kids' hands wherever they may be. As you know, there's a critical component where you really need to get books in kids' hands before they're 8 and reading well. Because there's an old saying in education that we learn to read until we're 8, and then after 8, we read to learn. Oh. And so you have to get them. And one of the examples is the Los Angeles Police Department has given away Little Free Libraries, and they boldly said, Little Free Libraries prevent crime. Or help prevent crime. I think, well, that's nice, but, you know, it's hard to imagine. Then they went on and said 85% of the juvenile delinquents that come before the court systems are functionally illiterate, 85%.
Right.
And then went on to say that many of our states look at the literacy rates in second and third grade to determine the prison population 10 to 15 years from now. So they show direct correlations or indirect correlations, I'm not sure which one, to crime, to drug addictions, to jobs, etc. So it's so critical that we get books in kids' hands and they have the confidence to read. Minneapolis School District came to us and said, we really want to get books in the hands of kids, especially in North Minneapolis, which is sad to say, the worst educational gap between blacks and white in the country, North Minneapolis. And so we started working with the school district, and what was amazing is that we put in 40 libraries with the school district that Little Free Library donated from our gift fund, which we used to help help out. And there were over 150 more libraries from, like, University of Minnesota, from 3M, from attorneys, from lawyers, from Rotary, Kiwanis, churches. And what we find is when we start to drive and push with a program like that, you end up getting support from all over the place that starts to bring more. Now, we just announced kind of a soft announcement that we have this Books Around the Block that we're trying to do in other parts around the country, and we've had over 200 libraries donated to us from different organizations. And
we're
putting 50 in Florida, 25 in Cleveland. We're putting 30 in Dallas and a bunch more in Minneapolis. So we're really excited about the program. Then another thing is that we have another program called Small Towns. There are over 11,000 small towns across America that do not have public access to books at all.
Yeah.
And so there was an article in Rotary in May about our organization, and we said if Rotary could step up and just take care of their county, you know, we could solve the problem in a year or two. So one of the things we're doing is we're talking to Rotaries in different parts of the country.
And that's what you did yesterday.
Yes, exactly. And we're saying, hey, step up, you know, take care of your county, your parish, and take care of all the small towns. Now, I live in St. Croix County, which is Hudson, Wisconsin, which is just 20 miles from the Twin Cities, just east. And our Rotary is going to take care of St. Croix County, and there's 41 small towns without libraries.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and the idea is you create the model like we did in Minneapolis or we're going to do in St. Croix County, and then you have other people duplicate it and follow it and understand it. And the whole thing is that empowerment for people is to show them something that really is not that hard, that they can take charge of, and you show them some small steps to make it happen. And it can pretty readily become a reality.
Well, one of the things I love is that, you know, it's also motivated by goodwill. It's one of those concepts that is so simple. Little free library, everybody gets it. You know, and that's part of the magic of it. And in New Orleans, I think, people have taken it one step further in the way New Orleanians will do.
Hopefully and naturally.
And made it fun for them. You know, when you drive around and look at these, they're phenomenal. You look at Nikki Lialy's on Louisiana Avenue.
She's so sweet.
And she's made this whole little landscape around hers that I find so charming. And then Duncan Finley has made a little free library that looks just like his house. Mm. I mean, it's just, it's so much fun to see them. And Linda Prout, we should give a big shout out to, who's like the great ambassador for little free libraries in New Orleans.
I call her the divine ambassador.
The divine ambassador. That's so true. So how have you found them? I mean, when you drive around and look at them, what do you think of these?
Well, they're wonderful. I mean, and I just actually find them astonishing. I feel like I'm a dad who's finding new children or something. You know,
it's, yeah.
it just makes me feel so proud. And then also, I think part of it is that there's a very interesting thing where little free libraries, people are always telling us two things, really. One, I've met more people in the last 5 to 7 days than I have in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
We hear that constant. And the other thing is that people that are community-minded and love books, they tell us books are part of their heart and soul. And Little Free Library becomes a natural extension of who they are.
Yeah.
And they share themselves. So they feel so, books are so important in their life, and they are part of their humanity that they feel, gee, now I can share with my neighborhood. Case in point, I was putting a little library in Madison, and I had an extra one, and a woman came up to me and said, I have to have this. I have to have one. And I said, okay. She said, do you have one today? And I said, sure, we'll be over in about an hour. And so we're putting in a little library, and we said, why did you want this little library so badly? And she said, I want to put books in there about Nepal. I said, okay, why? And she said, well, my kids are from Nepal, and I want all my neighbors to understand what they're about. And so we find that all the time. There's a numerous people that have little free libraries about cooking and gardens. And
yeah.
One gentleman in Arkansas, which I just adore, he has a snub-nosed scissors hanging from a string, and he has books on cooking. And then he has an herb garden around the library, and he tells people to take snippets from the herbs and grab a cookbook.
Idea.
And he tells me that sometimes he comes out in the morning and there's muffins and there's quiche, and he gets little presents from people. So,
well, there's an incentive, too.
So we hear that all the time. But, you know, so the LA Times said it was a mini town square, you know, and so it opens up the neighborhood. It opens up the discussion. And we're trying to figure that out and make it work better and the programs. And also we're launching specialty libraries that really kind of add to the neighborhood. We have a seed library that we just put out there. And the idea is to exchange seeds with neighbors and also recipes and ideas. And it's a seed and recipe idea exchange. And we gave one away, and that's now you can find it in New Orleans.
Yep.
So...
So community building, put your heart out there on the sidewalk with your little free library. Who knows what'll come back?
You should pretty good things.
Usually, yes. We've been talking with Todd Bowl, the co-founder of Little Free Libraries. And for more information, visit littlefreelibraries.org. Thank you so much, Todd.
It's a joy to be here.
Jeffrey Cohen is a proud New Orleans native who's been a journalist since 2001. He works for public radio and recently got in touch to alert us that he's coming home to New Orleans to sign his new book, Eva and Sadie and the Worst Haircut Ever. We're speaking to him from WNPR in Hartford, Connecticut. Jeff lives in Middletown with his wife and two daughters. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to The Reading Life.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Now, you did something that every parent dreams of. You took an ordinary event in the life of your family and turned it into a children's book. And everybody thinks they can do that, but not everybody does. So tell us about that process a bit.
It really took me and everybody in our family by surprise. What happened was, I guess it's 2.5, almost 3 years ago now, my older daughter cut off my younger daughter's hair. Sadie's the older one, Eva's the younger one. And after we calmed down a little bit after it happened, I sat them down at dinner one night. My wife was at a meeting, and it was just me and the girls at dinner. And every now and then, I like to record my kids because I'm kind of sappy. And I want to remember what they sound like when they're little. And so it's mostly kind of family album stuff I do for myself and for my wife. And I decided I would sit them down with my, you know, public radio reporter gear and ask them, you know, what were you thinking? Like, what was going through? I gave them the treatment, you know, the public radio journalism treatment. What were you thinking? What was going through your head? Why did you think this would be a good idea? And so I cut that up into a 3-minute, you know, little story that I put on a public radio website. It sort of sat there for a little while, for a few months. And then one day I'm sitting at my desk at work and one of my colleagues says, "Oh my God, Jeff, you're on Gawker." and I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Right. And then sure enough, where it's on Gawker. And then literally within minutes, my phone starts ringing. It was a crazy week. And by a week later, I got a phone call at my desk from a person at HarperCollins who says, "What would you say if we turned this into a children's picture book?" And I said, "I'd have to talk to my wife." And
wow.
We took the weekend to think about it. And frankly, I can be a little, you know, in my grumpy reporter mode. And I said, "Look, I really don't know who you are." If I remember right, I think she said, "You know, put the phone down and Google me." And I did. And sure enough, she was the real deal. And so by Monday or Tuesday or sometime during that week, we had said yes. And then you have to, you know, start all the negotiations. And that's really how it started.
That is one in a million. You know, that really doesn't happen that often.
No, it doesn't. I've often thought, you know, what makes this story any different or this haircutting incident any different? And really, the answer is nothing. It's not my kids necessarily that are interesting in this case. They are to me. But I don't know that they are to other people necessarily. I think what's interesting is that the story that they tell is a really universal kind of story. It's the kind of story that every parent has probably come in contact with. Somebody's tried to cut somebody's hair in somebody's family. Pretty much there's one degree of separation from you and that story. So it's really identifiable, I happen to think. I also happen to think that when you hear kids speaking and they don't have a filter, what they're doing is they're just thinking out loud. And so that audio really was a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old thinking out loud, and you get to hear it happen. And so that's why I happen to like it.
Well, they do sound like a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And now we'll hear a little bit of Sadie and Eva's actual conversation.
Now, did you think that you wanted a haircut?
No.
But you told her you wanted her to cut your hair.
Yeah, but I really wanted a haircutter to cut.
When did you realize that something had gone wrong?
When I was finished and I put the scissors back, I looked at her and I was like, uh-oh, this is bad.
Did Sadie told you to come downstairs and show us?
Yeah. And I said, "I got my hair cut, Mommy. Isn't it nice?" And Mama looked at it and she said, I heard yelling, Eva crying. Sadie, Eva, what were you thinking? Why were you thinking to cut your hair? I was crying and I said, Sadie cut my hair. And I told you not to.
And what did you do with the hair?
I hid under the radiator.
Oh, that was great. I love them. And you can hear the whole clip at our website, wwno.org. So, Jeff, how much work was it for you to transform that interview into a story?
You know, initially, not as much as I thought, and then eventually more than I thought. I sat down before a meeting with the editor in New York, and I said, well, the nuts and bolts of the story were there, the beginning and the middle, you know, the arc of the story was there. But as I wrote it as the kids told it to me, which was in the voice of two kids telling a story in the present tense about something that happened in the past. And it was a fine enough first draft, I suppose, but great feedback from Harper and my editor there, who's wonderful, and who said, look, A, try and tell it in Sadie's voice, not in a third person, you know, voice, and also try and tell it in the present tense, so it's beginning, middle, and end in real time. So that took some work, and then there was a lot of back and forth over time. But I'll tell you one thing about in news, as a reporter, we do a lot of brief writing with, you know, as few words as possible to get our ideas across as clearly as possible and as quickly as possible. And that actually happens to be fairly similar to children's book writing. So that was a nice treat, I think, because I think, strangely enough, news writing prepared me, hopefully, pretty well for children's book writing.
And tell us about working with your illustrator, Alana Allen.
That was great. Alana's terrific. She had never seen us or our kids, and I'm flattered to say I'm a lot thinner in the book than I probably am in real life. It's terrific, so thank you, Alana. And the kids look strikingly like our kids, although she never saw them. But, you know, it really is an arm's length interaction. I give my side of the story. I give the words to the editor. We go back and forth. They finally say, yes, we're done. And then it goes to the illustrator. Then it's her turn to do what she does with the story. And then there's some back and forth, but really there's not a whole lot of interaction with the illustrator creatively.
Right. So many people don't realize that. It's one of those odd business things that kind of works out for the best more often than not, interestingly.
It was definitely a surprise to me. It was kind of an arranged marriage, but it's, you know, we're happy together.
So what do Eva and Sadie think about the finished book?
They like it. They have a couple thoughts. One, Sadie initially didn't love the idea of it because, at least in part, it's an example of how she did something wrong by cutting her sister's hair. Over time, she's grown to like it, and it's kind of exciting. And we don't talk about it a whole lot at home because... I think they're sort of over it a little bit, but they do enjoy it. They do enjoy sharing it with their friends. And I got to go read the book at their school, which was a lot of fun. And Eva is sort of, Sadie was a little worried. Eva really couldn't care less.
Well, of course, they're older now, too.
That's right. Sadie is 8 and Eva is 6. So they're older and into new and better things, too. So.
Don't you find, as a journalist, that interviewing your kids is one of the most useful things you can do? I can interview my kids until I find out almost anything.
You're right. It does work really well. I've also learned that interviewing your wife doesn't really work so well. But certainly with the kids, it's interesting, especially because adults are fine interviews, and some of us are great interviews, but kids... you really don't have a very good sense of what's in their brains until they start telling you about it. And so we were in the backyard recently, this past weekend, just building a clubhouse with the kids out of old garden stuff and, you know, rotting fences. And the ideas that they have for it just blow me away. Just talking to them about, you know, they want to have a waiting room and a peek hole, as they say, not a peephole, but a peek hole. And it's just refreshing given the healthcare and corruption and state politics story that I normally do.
Right. So have they inspired another book, you think?
They have. In fact, this is a two-book sort of deal on the front end. So the next one comes out in June of 2015, and it's Sadie and Eva and the Best Classroom Ever. The first book was based on reality, which I'm okay with as a reporter. I write about reality all the time. Making stuff up is actually kind of hard. It's not something that I'm used to. So, but the second one is largely fictional, based on them a little bit. And then, who knows? You know, it'd be great to continue doing this over time. It's really a lot of fun. So hopefully there'll be more.
Well, now I want to see that clubhouse with the waiting room and the peek hole. You know?
I'll send you a picture.
Now, coming back to New Orleans is special for you. Tell us why this time.
You know, I'm a huge fan of coming home. I live in Connecticut, and I love Connecticut, and it's where my home is, and we'll be here for a long time, but home is also New Orleans. And so we're coming home. We'll have two book signings. One will be at a Barnes & Noble on Sunday the 17th, but the day before, we'll be at the Magic Box Toys on Magazine Street that is owned by Betsy Ordeman, who was my third grade teacher. So I'm really excited. I think I'm blushing. You can't see that on the radio, but to be in my third grade teacher's store is just a real trip. In fact, I was home for my 20th high school reunion two or three years ago and actually brought the girls to Miss Ordeman's old classroom, and that was a trip. I loved school. I always loved school, and my kids are kind of that way too.
Oh, that's great.
that was a trip for them. So this is really exciting for us.
Well, I'm sure it will be a lot of fun for Betsy too. So she's a wonderful person.
She's terrific, and she's totally great to have us come in there and do this. And, you know, it could just be me, my family, and our extended friends and Ms. Orderman. But come on out. But it's going to be great fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it will be great. We've been talking with Jeffrey Cohen, who's the author of Eva and Sadie and the Worst Haircut Ever. You can meet him Saturday, August 16th from 3 to 5 at the Magic Box. That's at 5508 Magazine Street. Or Sunday, August 17th at 2 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Anne Benoit signs New Orleans Best Ethnic Restaurants, Tuesday, August 12th at 6:30 at Hubble Library Author Night. Michael S. Martin discusses and signs Russell Long, A Life in Politics, Tuesday, August 12th at 6 at Octavia Books. Edward Branley discusses and signs New Orleans Jazz, Wednesday, August 13th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The Octavia Books Book Club discusses Khaled Hosseini's And the Mountains Echoed, Saturday, August 16th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. George Gertner signs Cast of Characters, Saturday, August 16th from 11 to 1 at Maple Street Bookshop. The New Orleans Public Library hosts a back-to-school rally at the Main Library and Duncan Plaza, Saturday, August 16th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. There will be a book parade at 11:15 from Loyola Avenue to Perdido, ending at Duncan Plaza. Sign up at the Main Library or Central City Branch. Kids are invited to dress as characters from their favorite books, and they must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. There will be interactive exhibits, musical performances, complimentary pizza and snowballs, as well as an array of food trucks. The Audubon Nature Institute will present a petting zoo and bugmobile. There will be live musical performances and book giveaways. There will be a special birthday tribute and toast to poet Charles Bukowski, Saturday, August 16th, from 8 to 11 p.m. at International House, featuring poetry readings and an open mic and special guests, collector Edwin Blair, author Jeff Weddle, writer Steve Garbarino, Sarah Gerard, Dave Brinks, and others. There will be an open mic reading Sunday, August 17th at 3 at the Maple Leaf Bar. Today's guest, Jeffrey Cohen, signs Eva and Sadie and the Worst Haircut Ever, Saturday, August 16th from 3 to 5 at the Magic Box, 5508 Magazine Street, and again Sunday, August 17th at 2 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. There will be an open mic reading Sunday, August 17th at 3 at the Maple Leaf Bar. Lou Schumann signs Hoop Junkie, the story of one man's career of working and having fun in the NBA, Monday, August 18th from 7 to 9 at Samuel's Blind Pelican, 1628 St. Charles Avenue. The Authors and Readers Convention takes place August 14th through 17th at the Marriott on Canal Street. Featured authors include Heather Graham and A.L. Jackson, along with dozens more. Events include a haunted history ghost tour, a Florida Diva party at Trashy Diva, and a masquerade costume ball. Check out authorreadercon.com for more information or to register. And Heather Graham's Writers for New Orleans takes place August 29th through 31st at the Hotel Monteleone. If you're an aspiring writer, especially of genre fiction, this is a good conference for you, with panel discussions and opportunities to meet editors and agents. Among the authors slated to attend, in addition to Heather Graham, are Julie Smith, Jacqueline Michard, and Chris Mooney. Check out writersforneworleans.com for more information or to register. And don't forget, the Friends of the New Orleans Public Library book sale continues every Wednesday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Latter Library Carriage House. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.